Lehigh Valley Public Radio is proud to present HealthBeat, a spotlight on healthcare in the Lehigh Valley, produced in conjunction with the Dorothy Ryder Poole Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Poole Foundation.
Good evening and welcome to HealthBeat. I'm your host, Greg Caponia, and I welcome our co-host from the Ryder Poole Foundation, Edward Meehan, and Ronald Dendis. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good to be with you, Greg. Hi, Greg.
HealthBeat is a program that's going to be taking a deeper look at healthcare in the Lehigh Valley. Tonight we're going to talk about the Collective Impact Fellowship and why the Ryder Poole Foundation thought it was a good thing to get involved with. Ed, can you give us a little bit of background as to why Ryder Poole got involved?
Absolutely. Well, as we all know, the Ryder Poole Foundation was founded in 1957 by Leonard and Dorothy Ryder Poole, and the Poole Healthcare Trust was founded on Leonard Poole's passing 45 years ago this month. They were very interested in the quality of life and particularly health of the Lehigh Valley, and we've for years had very progressive and very forward-thinking trustees who have used those resources to broadly address health and education and quality of life and human service issues in the Lehigh Valley. The growing interest in social determinants of health have made us confident that if we're going to improve health, we need to think about the things that impact health above and beyond health care. And so we've become much more interested in housing as it relates to health, education as it relates to health, public safety, any number of things that impact the health of a population. So with the encouragement of the Poole Healthcare Trustees and the Ryder Poole Trustees for us to continue to find innovative ways, we had what we call a social reconnaissance in 2012. We had our colleague Elspeth Heyman help us. We interviewed a number of people. And the realization was there was a real opportunity for economic development and new revitalization of the downtowns in the Lehigh Valley. But there was some question about what was happening in the adjacent neighborhoods. There was also expressed by many leaders the need for leadership in the not-for-profit sector, breaking through silos and thinking about how you could create win-win-win opportunities with a new style of leadership. And that led us to do our homework on what was valuable around the country and how people were thinking about this. And one of the models was collective impact. I have to credit Ron with all the work he did, all the research he did, all of the exploration around the country about what were best models. And we decided collective impact was really a way to go.
Ron, prior to collective impact, the term was out there called isolated impact. With the development that Edward's talking about, you have the neighborhood improvement zones or the NIZ. Can you tell us how the NIZ figures into isolated versus collective impact and also tell us what isolated impact is?
So if you have this great economic engine driving change downtown, and you are ignoring the community engine around here, your model's not going to work. We've seen plenty of places around the country where economic doesn't improve community. So we had actually taken several of the downtown leaders to various places around the East Coast, Baltimore, Philadelphia, where there were examples of how economic engine was used to drive community change, and how it really was in the enlightened self-interest of the private sector to play a role in this. So it made for this wonderful, as we're watching downtown Allentown go through this incredible change over a very quick period of time, how do we make sure that at the same time the neighborhoods are benefiting from it? And when we started looking at how some of the complex social issues were being addressed in the neighborhoods, we found that they were very silo-oriented. Education was working on education problems. Health was working on health problems. Housing were working on housing problems. And we knew these problems, these social issues, were so complex that they could not be addressed by a single sector. So we really wanted to focus on bringing sectors together to co-design solutions that would meet multiple sector needs and, most importantly, drive the social change that we wanted.
It's not necessarily easy to bring an organization that thinks like a silo and put six of them together in a room and then have them all give up their ability to affect what they're working on. How do you get everybody to share in the fellowship of a program like this?
Greg, I would say, to Ron's point, you know, the private sector leadership in the NIS has readily jumped to this. This wasn't a difficult topic to convince. We all understand that the economic engine will not be as successful as it can be without thinking about the adjacent neighborhood. So no problem there. With regard to your question about getting agency executives to think about working together, collaborative cooperative is really hard. It takes a lot of effort. It's very labor intensive. And so if you're an agency and you can solve a problem by yourself, God bless, go do it. You know, everything doesn't require a meeting of the minds and a long, laborious process. But many of the things that these agencies are bumping into are beyond their capacity to solve by themselves. And it's not their fault. We have trained the not-for-profit world to think in silos. We reward siloed work. We fund siloed work. We have expectations about small things that are okay. But in the large frame of things, we're not making the kind of sustained, dramatic difference we could make if we worked together. So part of the, and to the credit of the Collective Impact Fellows and to Ron again, the idea would be, look, if you have an easy fix that you can do by yourself, go for it. If you need another person to help you that doesn't require a whole lot of effort, fantastic. But when you're talking about these large, difficult, decades-long issues regarding education attainment and housing, it's going to involve a different way of thinking about it and a different kind of leadership. As labor-intensive as it is, there's no shortcut to it.
Ron, please close the circle for us again here, how all this good economic impact helps the predictive outcomes of the health of our citizens in the Lehigh Valley.
Clearly, at the root of many of our social issues is poverty and is equity. And the best way to address these issues is creating opportunities for economic mobility. We are not going to social service our way out of these complex problems. We're not going to publicly fund our way out of these problems. The best way of addressing some of these complex social issues is by creating opportunities for economic mobility for folks. It means making some slight trajectory changes in how we do this. You know, we work off of, we all kind of remember that old adage of practice makes perfect. Well, what we find is no, practice makes permanent. And folks have been doing it this way for so long that it's just become the way, as Ed had said, it just becomes the way that they do business. So how do we break that permanent, hey, look, this is how our culture works when it comes to addressing complex problems, and start co-designing new ways of approaching it with people from the community, with nonprofits? This isn't the edict coming from a high that says, okay, here's how thou shalt behave now. This is, wait a second, guys, are we comfortable with the way things are working now? No, we're not comfortable with it, but it's the way that it is.
So, Ed, how do you assess the needs of what should be worked on with the collective impact? How do you get the citizens involved?
With Ron's initial research that he did around the country, there were models, and I think many people in the private sector who are listening to this program can attest to the fact that, you know, you send someone off for training and they quote go up to the mountain and they get it,
right,
and they come back and say, this is what I've learned. And what happens is no one else heard that message, so nothing happens. So we deliberately said, rather than go off for some expensive training and send a few people off, let's think about a collaborative among not-for-profit leaders and think about what do we think needs to happen in terms of getting exposure to executive leadership training, emotional intelligence, collective impact principles, how do you measure, how do you think strategically in terms of agency work. And we put out an initial frame of bringing multiple experts across a span of 9 months, and true to practice, trying to practice what we preach, we kept it wide open so that the fellows had the ability to adapt and say, this feels good, we want more of this, or that person didn't quite resonate with us. And so over the last 7 years, we've evolved the program to adapt to the needs as expressed to us by the not-for-profit fellows who've been involved in the fellowship. We're trying to be flexible, adaptive, and responsive to our colleagues and folks in the fellowship by living that kind of practice. How do we adapt and how do we modify it? How do we develop our own agility to be more responsive to leadership development?
Ron, is there an example that you can give us, a city who's done this correctly, a model for the Allentown area?
We've borrowed from multiple models. I mentioned before we had been down to Baltimore and saw the role that places like Johns Hopkins played in driving some community change. We've looked at leadership development programs around the country and looked to kind of borrow some of those approaches. I had this great opportunity a couple of decades ago to be part of a Creating Healthy Communities Fellowship where, as Ed had described, you get on the plane and you fly to different areas and learn from other models. So we borrow generously from a whole bunch of different places from around the country.
It's not necessary to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of opportunity out there, and sometimes I think people don't realize how important it is to actually see what's happening instead of hear about it. It's like being in a classroom where the teacher can show you how to do this versus hearing about it. It's the tactile learning idea versus learning by somebody telling you.
A great part of the value in that is showing that it can be done. So it's not necessary to say, hey, what they did in Tucson, Arizona, we have to replicate that exactly. The benefit is saying, look at what they did. Wait a second, why can't we do that? And kind of developing that, hey, you know, Allentown and the Lehigh Valley in many ways has had a chip on its shoulder for many years. Oh, we couldn't possibly be doing that. And, you know, and just kind of changing that attitude of, oh, heck yeah, why not us?
Why do you think that attitude prevailed?
Peter Block is one of my favorite authors on kind of leadership and thinking about this work. And to paraphrase, one of his statements is, what is the story this community tells itself, and what is it costing this community? And I think communities can get into a slump. I think the change of an industrial economy from Bethlehem Steel, Mack Truck, et cetera, many companies that left, that was the bedrock of the Lehigh Valley, and there probably was a 20, 30-year shift there where what does the Lehigh Valley look like? Its leadership is changing and evolving. Its economic base is changing and evolving. So I think it takes a while for a community to recalibrate and get back on its feet. Think about going forward. We're certainly on the right track. I mean, the last 10 or so years has been extraordinary for Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton in terms of the development that's going on. And so, again, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, when you see economic engines that really look like they're beginning to take off, then it's a great time to be thinking about the adjacent and supportive and ancillary kinds of things like education, like health, like housing.
This is very interesting. We will be back in just a minute. You are listening to Health Beat.
Connect to WDIY with our new app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY Live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Hi, this is Janice Ian. Every Monday night at 7 o'clock, WDIY is keeping the golden age of folk music alive with folk classics. Your host, Steve Aronson, features music from all the singer-songwriters, including yours truly, from the groups, with a little folk rock sprinkled in for good measure. Folk Classics is the show to listen to, Mondays at 7 p.m. on WDIY.
Welcome back to Health Beat. I'm your host, Greg Caponia, and with me are co-hosts, Edward Meehan and Ronald Dendis from the Ryder Pool Foundation. Gentlemen, we're talking about collective impact. And in our break, we talked a little bit about small but significant steps. Can you tell us the improvements that are occurring as we speak?
You know, part of getting sectors to work together, we've all been part of these large collaboratives where we invite 50 people to be part of conversations that are going to change, fill in the blank. And, you know, when you get 50 people in the room, you have 52 agendas. They're all good. They're all relevant. But there's no way collaboration happens without focus,
right?
Without a common agenda, without everybody rowing in the same direction. because everybody's going to want to have the boat go in the direction that they want it to go in. So in order for collaboration to truly work, it needs to start with small, trusting groups. You need to know the people that are across the table from you. You need to trust them. You need to understand how their sector works, the language that they use, their guiding principles, etc. Without that happening, it becomes nearly impossible to truly collaborate. So what we've tried to do with the fellowship is, let's start with that building block of, let's provide people who oftentimes are working in the same neighborhoods with the same families, but have no idea who each other are or don't know anything about their agencies. So when we thought about starting with a specific footprint, you know, the neighborhoods around the NIS, and say, who are the nonprofit leaders from various sectors? How do we bring them together? How do we give them one heck of a leadership development experience and provide them with dedicated space where they get to know each other, trust each other, understand how their systems work?
How do you keep all of this good work going at a time when it's difficult to have a one-on-one conversation because of the pandemic? We're really talking about relationships, aren't we?
Absolutely. So two things I would cite, Greg. One is in March, when we were just beginning to appreciate the impact of COVID, we were able to reach out to the community of practice, as we call it, of 6 years of Collective Impact Fellows and trust their experience about what was happening on the ground and how could Rider Pool Foundation and Pool and Lehigh Valley Health Network deploy some small but on-target resources to help with education and things like diapers and food in the beginning of the COVID pandemic. It's not just an exercise. I mean, it was like, okay, this is real, and let's reach out to our collective impact buddies and start talking about who needs what and how do we work together. The second thing [S2] Sure. [S1] I would mention is that we had a community of practice fellowship. Two of them last week had just under 30 collective impact fellows get together on a Zoom call. And again, with an agenda, with discussion, with dialogue that was engaged and very meaningful.
At a time like this, how do you measure what matters?
We actually have some rigor in place to start looking at the impact of the fellowship. We use a ripple effect mapping approach where we look for what the fellows call the but fours. But for that conversation we had, but for that meeting that we attended, this wouldn't have happened, and this wouldn't have happened, and this wouldn't have happened. So we actually have this process where we can start looking at these ripples that were created during the fellowship and how those ripples kind of go out into the lake and the ultimate impact that they start having. Second evaluative piece has been a social network analysis. How strong is the connection that has occurred before amongst the fellows? And the data tell us that the relationships that are developed in the fellowship are real, they're sustaining, and they're beneficial.
Once again, can you give us an example of a time that you can measure this and say, wow, putting our heads together really did this?
I could give a couple, and much like someone saying, who's your favorite child, there are dozens of really good examples out there of how this has worked. One that rises to the top, we're in the middle of an opioid crisis, and there were identified a lot of pregnant women who were overdosing. And when Lehigh County Drug and Alcohol tried to intervene, they found that it became really challenging to, how do you get a woman who was pregnant detoxed and drug and alcohol out? There really weren't places available that could do that. They started, so a collective impact fellow from Drug and Alcohol started working with a collective impact fellow from Lehigh Valley Health Network and working with a collective impact fellow from the district attorney's office, and they developed a way, again, working with some physicians at LVHN, developed a way to create a seamless, barrierless path for women to get help and to deliver healthy babies while they were achieving sobriety. And we were averaging about an overdose a week and had no place. That's 52 pregnant women and 52 babies a year.
Sure.
And because of this, what came out of this were things like a clear path to treatment. The only two medically advanced treatments for detox in OBGYN clinics and centers, both occurring at Lehigh Valley Health Network, and babies being born healthy that otherwise would have had serious developmental delays. So So there are stories around suicide prevention and mental health and other issues that have come about. You know, we collect these stories and tell them quite often, but, you know, that's always one that just has multiple levels of success.
Ed, what do you think would surprise our listeners the most about Collective Impact?
I think first that some listeners might be surprised that agency executives and not-for-profit folks resonate with this very well, that they're excited about it, that there's interest in it, that there's an appreciation of the bigger picture. Everybody works hard and is doing a great job, but this is an opportunity to think above and beyond and have some more of a multiplier effect. So I think some of your listeners might be surprised at that. And talking about, you know, what is the story a community tells itself, there's a new story being told, which is we can do this and we can make a difference and equity matters and inclusion matters. And having the ability to think about how all of these moving parts across what were previously silos that are breaking down make a difference. I think some of your listeners might be surprised that there's an energy and vitality to this that's real. It's just not the cute idea du jour. This is a very transformational opportunity right now.
I think it's important to point out that while the Lehigh Valley is going through COVID, there is a group like Ryder Pool that circles all of this energy and success into communicating and relating to and helping underserved communities. And it all gets back to the predictive outcomes and the health of the Lehigh Valley and the people who are growing up, living in, and staying in this area.
It's the thing that I'm most proud of that the Pool trustees and Ryder Pool trustees emphasize, which is we're preserving the legacy of Leonard and Dorothy Ryder Pool. We're sticking to the mission about what we do and why we do it. And at the same time, we are wide open to innovation, change, adaptability, thinking about how to do this work going forward. So Lehigh Valley is an extraordinary place, and people are beginning to take notice. Maybe at some future time we could talk about our relationship with the Center for Disease Control and a fellowship program that we have. And when you say, what communities have we looked at, there are communities who are looking at what we do as well. So, and that's just not the pat on the back. That is a different opportunity to engage with thought leadership around the country that only makes us better.
So once again, when somebody comes in and visits our community, where do you start? What do you show them as a success story?
Well, multiple things. We've done this a lot. Actually, Ron is our best tour guide, but it's a combination of giving them some background data that they might read before they get here, and then showing them what has happened in terms of, say, all the work with the NIS and economic development in Center City, Allentown. And then if it's a nice day, we go for a walk. If not, if it's not a nice day, we get in the car and we do a windshield tour. And we might stop and show them Building 21 and talk with Jose Rosado Jr., the principal of Building 21, who's also a Collective Impact Fellow. And we might go over to Boys and Girls Club, and we might go over to Ripple Community and talk with Sherry Bender and get a feel on the ground about how our neighbors resonating with this work, what are the needs and felt issues at the neighborhood level. So we'd give a combination of the high-level data, the policy piece, the view from 30,000 feet, combined with let's get out of the car and walk around and see the neighborhood where Hayes mm-hmm. Elementary School will be starting, and let's talk with a couple of parents and folks from the Promise neighborhood who could help us understand what does this feel like if you live in this neighborhood.
So give us a snapshot into post-COVID.
Ron will give you the much better description, but we haven't stopped. We're going full steam right now. And when this passes and we're able to all get out and do this work again, it will be place-based. It will be focused on some of the adjacent neighborhoods. And Ron, why don't you share what you're working on with the Collective Impact Fellows right now?
Yeah, and for us, look, as that says, that it never stopped. It's not like time out. Okay, now we have to deal with COVID. It's the same template. It's the same work. It's the same people, it's the same trust. Now it's a little bit more complicated. How do we use what we have in place to address COVID issues? And it still became, how do we engage community? How do we use data? How do we address housing issues? They were the same thing. They were exacerbated by COVID, but we didn't have to change the playbook.
Has Collective Impact helped you navigate through COVID? And if so, can you tell us how?
It was immense, because when we started learning about communities that were at the highest risk that did not have the information or did not trust the folks that were delivering the message. Some of our communities of color are not going to listen to government saying, wear a mask, social distancing. And so being able to create credible messengers and being able to get the word out into community through credible messengers. We convened some collective impact fellows and said, there are folks out there that are going to be homeless. What are we going to do? There are folks out there that are hungry. What do we do? And to see these partners from Ripple Community, from Meals on Wheels, from Promised Neighborhood, from Conference of Churches, you know, these different organizations working together to say, how do we address homelessness? How do we do it during COVID? How do we do it post-COVID? So we made sure that we were looking at responding, helping recovery, and then building resiliency. So the work never stopped. It just continued to build.
So for our listeners out there, how can they learn more about Collective Impact and all the good work that's being done?
There is information available on our website about the fellowship, and there's lots of research about the concept of Collective Impact. And we've published a couple of articles about how we've used that here locally that, again, are available on our website.
Edward and Ronald, thank you, gentlemen. Once again, Ryder Pool doing some outstanding work in the community, and we thank you for that. Thank you for sharing with us the idea of collective impact. And if you want to learn more, you can always go to the Ryder Pool website and learn about all the good things that they're doing. You are listening to Health Beat. This is WDIY. Thank you and have a good evening.
Lehigh Valley Public Radio is proud to present HealthBeat, a spotlight on healthcare in the Lehigh Valley, produced in conjunction with the Dorothy Ryder Pool Healthcare Trust and the Ryder Pool Foundation.